This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of perversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for another This Just In, the supposedly weekly podcast brought to you by the editors of the Means Literary Journal. Each show is our feeble, poorly researched, and last-minute scramble to offer you a half hour's worth of worthy entertainment via humorously intellectual discussion about pop and high culture topics. As for your hosts, I am Tanner Hagen, podcasting from Los Angeles.
And I'm Chris View, podcasting from Detroit.
And we've got a pretty decent show for you today. The very first topic I wanted to talk about is fresh in my mind because I just came back last night from going to my first ever concert festival, which is the Coachella Festival here in Southern California.
First question, how's Depeche Mode?
Is that even a question? I guess that's the point we're getting at, first of all, is there a better live band on the planet than Depeche Mode?
No.
I don't think so either. And it amazes me that they are so fucking old, and yet they are they are still so awesome live. I was just amazed.
Yeah, I mean, Scott and I saw them in November, and it was like just seeing the way David Gahan works it on stage. It's incredible. And Martin Gore, the whole time, he's working the audience. Was he wearing angel wings when you were there, by the way?
Yeah, angel wings and like a straight. Like, it was like 90 degrees out. He's wearing angel wings and a rooster snow cap.
Yeah, he was wearing that at our concert, too. Yeah. But he was rocking it out. Now, here's the big question regarding Depeche Mode. Was Fletcher lazy as fuck the whole concert?
Yeah, okay. what's amazing is I think it's becoming his gimmick. And for those of you who aren't Depeche Mode fans, I mean, there's three of them are the original members, with one member gone, and that's... There's David Gahan, who's the lead singer, Martin Gore, who's the songwriter, guitarist, / keyboardist, and then there's this Andrew Fletcher guy, who claims he's a synth player and a bass player, but he doesn't do anything. He
just, at least not in concert.
No, he stands behind his console and just sort of nods his head and points at the audience.
He nods his head, he points, and then, like, he'll look to certain parts of the audience and then just wave to him. It's like, dude, Martin Gore and David Gahan are sweating their asses off, and here's you just, like, having a leisure holiday up on stage.
It's so great, because every act I saw, I mean, everyone on stage is doing something, and very obviously doing something. But then there's Fletch. And the best part is during... Dave Gahan makes a point to introduce every person... Mm-hmm. During the concert, and they do a special something after they're introduced, or are in the process of doing a special something. When he introduces Fletcher, he's really doing nothing. And after he introduces him, you expect him to do something, and he still doesn't do anything. It's just awesome.
He just gives a nod.
Yeah.
But you know, would it be a Depeche Mode show if he wasn't? You know, if he wasn't, like, half of the fun for me is watching Fletcher do nothing on stage. I kind of laugh at it. But okay, were they touring still with that the other pianist who he's got the long, like, black scraggly hair?
Yeah,
that guy is fucking amazing.
Yeah, he's their drummer's so good too. Their drummer looks old as hell, but he still rocks.
That's
it
the
up.
Same guy too. Yeah, but it's just. Depeche Mode is the hardest working band in show business right now.
I know, and
minus Fletch.
It really is just a damn fun show to go to, and I guess that's why the tickets still cost so much, and they sell out everything, and they can headline a indie rock festival. You know,
how does Coachella work? Do they have like 9 stages, and you just go to certain ones? Or
well, here's my summation of Coachella. I'm happy to have gone, but I'll never go again. I mean, it's like hell on earth. Everything's a hassle. And to sort of give you a description, we were all pumped up for it, and there was a couple bands I wanted to see that were on around 4 or something like that. But, I mean, it's the whole thing starts at, like, noon or 2 or I don't know. So we're like, oh, we'll go late. We'll give us, you know, it takes an hour to get there. We'll give ourselves an extra hour to get parking, get situated, blah, blah, blah. Well, we set off. We get, you know, we make the hour drive. It was quick. We get off at the exit. And we get into, like, stop-and-go traffic. We're like, whatever, this, you know, okay, there's 80,000 people. There's going to be some stop-and-go traffic. Lo and behold, we're in stop-and-go traffic on the 4 miles from our exit to the Coachella parking lot for 2 hours.
Oh, my fucking God.
4 miles in 2 hours. Wow. I never experienced anything like it. And what it really came down to was just horrible planning by the organizers and by the city of Indio, because the 4 miles from the exit to Coachella is just suburban driving. I mean, you're in the middle of strip malls, all that business. And they didn't do anything special. They have cops out there. They're not directing traffic. They're just sitting there. Mm-hmm. So you have 80,000 people using residential traffic with regular traffic lights trying to get to the concert. It doesn't compute. It doesn't work. It was nuts. And by the way, like a half hour into that stop and go traffic, we realized we forgot the tickets.
Oh, no!
So there was no turning back. We just banked on buying them there because we're just like, you know, screw this. We've got to at least go.
Jesus.
So we paid twice for the tickets.
That's ridiculous.
I know. Yeah, but we ended up getting in there, and I mean, it's a mass of humanity, stinking humanity.
All right, now let's talk about some of the acts that were going on last night, because it looks like Daft Punk was playing. How were they? Did you see them at all?
I had my schedule, because there's like 4 stages, all different times, people playing simultaneously. So we had our schedule. I wanted to see Animal Collective and Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. Missed both of those in traffic, which I'm sure many people missed them too, because I don't think anyone anticipated that. And I ended up seeing Kanye West... after him, Sigur Rós.
How were they?
Great. And then Franz Ferdinand, just because I had to get in position for Depeche Mode.
Yeah,
and then
I
saw Depeche Mode.
So you missed Daft Punk. I was just curious because I was always wondering how they were live when it, you know.
They were playing with Depeche at the same time as Depeche Mode, so there's
no way.
Could
you hear them in the distance?
Yeah, and it just sounded like their albums.
Okay.
this is an awesome part. I mean, the festival atmosphere is not my scene. And there's obviously a ton of people who that is their scene. I mean, during the concert, I guesstimated that approximately 60% of the people there could not have given a shit about who was playing. They were just there to do drugs and hang out, you know? And, I mean, there was people everywhere, dirty as fuck, laying in their own filth. Like, I saw multiple people pass out and fall on the ground, including one high school-aged girl who looked out of her mind on drugs, being, like, attended to by 2 high school-aged idiots who probably fed her drugs. And then there was one old woman who was passed out in that... You know how you can tell when somebody really crashed and, like, their body is contorted?
Yeah.
You know, it looks like a murder scene?
Yeah.
This woman was like that, with her legs, like, contorted weird, and just passed out on the ground. And everyone was just walking over her.
What?
And I was sitting there... And, like, I looked at my girlfriend, I was like, this is a serious situation here.
Yeah.
And there's no one to attend to her. There was one guy nearby who was, like, nearing passing out, and he was old, too, but he was just laughing maniacally. It was nuts. I mean, the whole thing, it was just not my scene, but obviously some people just love that, like, trashed, like, living in our own shit scene. And But I have
go ahead.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to... go ahead and say what you're going to say, because this is more about what's going on right now, tonight.
I have to say that of the acts I saw, I was pleased with everyone who performed. I mean, Kanye West really... I mean, I'd always...
Is he the only rapper?
No, there was Common, who's his
I'm
friend.
I'm looking at the schedule. I can't see him, though.
He was... Okay. I mean, he really... He performed. He was like a big-time showman. I mean, his music sounded great. Mm-hmm. And there was one awesome part where he's like, I'm just going to play songs that I like, you know, just to show you a little bit about me. So he played, like, songs from other people and just danced, and one of them was, he goes, don't even try to not act like you don't like this song, and he played Take On Me by A-ha, and he was like doing 80s dances and running around. It was just so great, because it was totally not something you expect from a rapper. But
at the same time, he's exactly right. I mean, who doesn't like Take On Me?
I know. And Sigur Rós was, of course, brilliant, but, I mean, everyone there, they just, I don't think they understood
what's
him.
It like? What's Sigur Rós' set like? I mean, do they have this, like, I just imagine this bluish light shining on them, and the lead singer almost being immersed in darkness, though, and then the rest of them just playing this ambient sound, and him just kind of like, you know, doing his shit. What was it like?
I mean, they played it off like they were rock stars. I mean, they had some lights. I mean, they weren't shadowed in darkness or anything. They were right out there, and they played their music, and it sounded remarkably a lot like their albums, but different, you know, more raw. And, I mean, he broke his, the lead singer broke his bow, you know, on his guitar. He uses a violin bow. Broke that because he was, like, rocking out, and they, like, threw their instruments and stuff. But, I mean, everyone there, I don't think anyone got them. There were a few people who were really into it, but most people I don't think got them. And Franz Ferdinand, I think, was like, I don't really like Franz Ferdinand. I think they're, like, circus music. Like, their lyrics are bull and, you know, et cetera. But, I mean, they put on a hell of a show. They're, like, they're like a Who-style rock band, which I had no idea of. Yeah. And I mean, and they have a lot of man love. There's a lot of guys who like them, and a lot of guys who like to dance to them and point at them. So it was very homoerotic.
I'm intrigued because I'm looking at the set that you went to last night, and it bills Depeche Mode first. I'm curious about this billing. Depeche Mode can billing, Franz Ferdinand, Sigur Rós, and then the rest of the people are kind of like, eh, what? I don't know who these people are. But then I look at tonight, okay, and this is tonight, meaning our podcast is released tomorrow, being Monday, but tonight being Sunday, the 30th of April. The billing shows it as this. Number one bill is Tool. Love them. I mean, they deserve number one billing, but then you look at who's number two. It's Massive Attack. And after Massive Attack, it's Madonna, which you would think Madonna would be commanding that whole show, but she's third on the billing.
Yeah.
Then the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, okay, then Block Party, and then Paul Oakenfold, which I don't know if he's going to spin like an 85-minute set or if he's just going to do, you know, Game Master or what. What's he going to do? And then, but then they have this, that Jewish rapper, Mattis Yahoo, or however you say his name.
Yeah.
I don't really care about him. And then there's, like, classic favorites like Sleater-Kinney, who I know my girlfriend loves, Mogwai, Coheed and Cambria, and then you go down, and then they've got, there's, like, Sal George, who did, like, he's the guy in Life Aquatic, who does all the covers of David Bowie songs. That's Sal George. He's up there, and his album is incredible, if anyone wants to pick it up. I think he's a Brazilian artist. He's awesome. And then the Go Team is in the middle of this, and that's kind of upsetting because the Go Team is pretty much better than, let's see, Scissor Sisters, Mattis Yahoo, Wolf Parade, James Blunt. Fuck that guy. James Blunt, I thought his career was ruined after he was on SNL because the way his murderous eyes looked at everyone.
I know, he looks like he stares into your soul.
I remember watching that performance on SNL, and me and my former roommate, Mike McKitty, were sitting there watching this, and we're like, this is the end of his career. He's done.
And it was the beginning of his career. It launched him.
That's so weird. If I was at home, and I was any girl who's wrapped up in his music, I'd be like, this dude is a rapist. That's the look he gives as he's thrusting powerfully.
Somehow people loved it.
Well, yeah, but I didn't love it one bit. I thought that was when he killed himself.
I don't get their scheduling either. I couldn't explain it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, really.
No, it doesn't.
I think because a lot of it has to do with when people want to leave, truthfully.
Yeah. Like, I guess, yeah. If you like Tool, you might be someone who is a night owl. And if you like the Octopus Project, you might like Midday Show. So
yeah, and I think they want to spread it out, you know, get different scenes going at different times. And I think they also want to cater to certain artists. Like, Madonna doesn't want to leave there at 1 a.m. She's not going to leave, you know, she would never do that.
But she also wants a good 10 p.m. slot or 9 p.m., you know?
Yeah.
I guess
she was added late, though.
Was she?
I think, yeah. So was Kanye West, and he was on earlier.
He's not even on this. He's not even on your guys' list. I don't even see him there. So he must have been a real late addition. But I'm kind of disillusioned by it because it makes sense that Tool would be at the top. Heck, and it's like, I don't think they're that big. They've never done anything that great for me. In fact, I would say the Go Team deserves a higher spot than Massive Attack.
I think they've got a cultish following.
Well, fuck their cult.
I just wish they had put Franz Ferdinand on earlier and had Kanye West lead into Depeche Mode, because I think that would have been sweet as hell. Because it's
same. That would have been kind of cool.
It's the same type of vibe. Like Kanye West has like a dancing, fun vibe. And
what
so
was Depeche Mode set?
Awesome. It was badass. They played maybe three songs off the new album and just all hits the rest
first
of the
off,
way.
First off, when Scott and I were at Depeche Mode, we made sure to call you during, I don't know, what was it, Somebody? Or what? No, wait. It was Grabbing Hands. Everything Counts. We called you. Why didn't you call us during that while Scott, you were raising your hands on high?
Scott told me to call him, but not only was I super close to the stage and right next to the speakers to where everything would be muddled, but it was like, I don't know, 11, 12 p.m. Pacific, so there would have been no point in calling.
I was up. I was up, and I was drunk, and I was watching The Deadliest Catch on Discovery Channel.
Yeah,
that show on TV, P.S.
They played a great set. I mean, they played Shake the Disease, Photograph.
Photograph!
Yeah,
It
was. I mean, it was a great
photographic
set.
Pictures,
and of course, they finished with Never. They finished with Never Let Me Down, and like 80,000 people were waving their hands.
Oh my god!
I mean, it was great. But
thing about Depeche Mode shows is how many people just get involved. It's always a participatory show.
Yeah.
And you never feel like an idiot for doing it. Case in point, the year was 2001. Tanner and I are at the hit show at what was then. What was it called back then? Pine Knob. Now it's DTE, whatever they call it. We were at Pine Knob, and everyone is waving their hands in sync to which song was it? Name any song, actually. It could have been any song. If you turned around, that entire audience, it looked like an ocean because everyone's hands were making waves, and these waves they transcended all realistic form. It became these lines of aura and specter that you could see, and the Evermist it descended upon us, and we just felt the glow of human connection. Does that make any sense? So it was incredible, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think we should move on. We spent 20 minutes talking about Coachella.
Well, mostly Depeche Mode. All right. What was the next topic?
Your topic about another tax break.
Here's the deal. I'm in the car with my parents on Friday because I had to get my rot gut checked out. basically, what's happening with me is I'm shitting blood and I needed a scope put in my belly. So I'm on my way to the hospital. I'm on my way to the hospital. And my mom asks me what I think about this new bill that the Republicans are putting through, wherein, basically, here's what's happening. The Republicans are putting through a bill that states that every American's going to get $100 for the burden that they've had to bear for buying gas at a higher price. And what's going on beneath this bill, there's another few clauses, if you look down, which basically says you'll get that $100, but we also get the right to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And it's like, hey, here's an issue that's been a hot topic for years. Like, do not touch the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And they're burying within this bill this we get to drill there. And it's bullshit because they're trying to slide a pass because they know based on the 2000 election when Bush slid through that stupid ass thing that said every American's gonna get $300 because we've got a surplus. Look at what Bill Clinton did. He's hoarding money. His money should go in your pocket. Like, what the fuck? That makes no sense. But all right, people were duped into, quote, David Cross. They all got a hammock. So wonderful. They got their hammock out of it, but it did nothing for us, obviously. Well, now they're trying to tuck this away, and my mom, bless her heart, but she's duped by this bullshit. And I had to explain to her in so many terms that she was dumb for this, because basically she is the epitome of your average voting American. And your average voting American looks at that $100 and says, you know what, I could use that $100. And yeah, gas prices are high. And guess what? Wildlife Refuge, we need the oil, because these Saudis are charging us absorbent amounts, and we need to be doing domestic drilling. We need to be finding our own source, because these people are exploiting us. But what they don't understand is they have to equate our oil addiction to maybe a heroin's addiction, you know, a heroin addict's addiction to heroin, wherein it wouldn't be justified if a heroin addict decided one day, I'm going to go fuck up this dude's house because he's probably got heroin in it, and I'm just going to throw it to pieces. You know, I'm gonna take that one little bit of heroin that he's got, I'm going to shoot up, and it's going to feel great for a few like a few hours. But when it's done, the actual problem has not been fixed. I'm still a heroin addict. Okay? So, drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is equivalent to a heroin addict fucking up some dude's house. You don't go in there, mess up the wildlife there, which includes, might I say, grizzly bears, sheep, wolves, wolverines, snow geese, peregrine falcons, other migratory birds, Dolly Varden, and grayling. I mean, these are animals you do not find anywhere in the world. And not to mention the pristine and majestic beauty of these mountains. I'm looking, I'm at, go to arctic.fws.gov and take a look at this amazing picture of a mountainscape, alright? And tell me you want to put a fucking oil derrick there? And then, not to mention, my mom has the audacity to say that would not ruin the environment. Didn't she watch that Saved by the Bell episode where they were going to get all that money, and then Zach took out the oil derricks and put them around the campus of the school, the little model, and then he sprayed oil all over it? Everyone knows what happens when you put oil derricks in a pristine landscape. Oil gets everywhere.
I think made a great analogy with the heroin addict, but you're missing one thing, and that's that to get into the house, the heroin addict should have, like, launched himself head first through a window and destroyed his body in the process, because essentially to fuel our oil addiction, we're further destroying the environment, which our very oil addiction is destroying the environment. So we're furthering that destruction by pursuing this task.
Exactly. So imagine a heroin addict with a face full of glass and, like, bleeding everywhere, and then he's like, I just need one fix. And he gets the fix, and then a couple hours later he comes off and he's like, man, I need another fix. And the problem's not fucking solved, people. So my point is drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is a retarded idea. And these Republicans who are doing it, obviously, whatever facts they're spouting out that say it's a good idea, I don't know who the hell they're consulting on this, because everybody in their right mind knows that destroying this one last vestige of wildlife refuge is an idiotic idea. Now, you can argue the governor of Alaska is all for this, but let's look at where it lies. The guy is a Republican. So this guy is not doing this for the best interest of Alaska. He's doing this because he wants good clout with his own party. If you can't see that, you're an idiot. You're an absolute moron. The point is, right now, what we need to be looking at is alternative fuel sources, not looking at drilling in our own wildlife refuges. So right now, we're on the right step. We're looking at ethanol. Wonderful idea. I like the idea of putting farmers who farm corn in business and putting corn into my car. I like it. I like corn digesting it, and I like my car digesting it. I also like the idea of looking at hybrid technology, and right now, we're in the infancy. But look, if we can avoid drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, maybe we can then, you know, make it so that oil prices get so fucking high that we have to do this. People don't look at it that way. They don't look at it saying, like, you know, basically, if we get oil prices low, the problem is that it's, again, it's a temporary solution. We're somehow get at the real problem. We really actually need these oil prices to get so goddamn high that we say, all right, look, enough is enough. What different fuel technology can we develop? Because I'm not paying $4 a gallon. That's the end of the story. I'm not doing it anymore.
See, they...
And so at that point, the auto industry is going to have to conform to what the buying market wants. And the market is not going to want regular, you know, unleaded oil. They're going to want to ensure that we're getting shit that's cheap to make. And to do that, we just need to... We need to get rid of our oil dependency, period. We need to start running off of water. I'm throwing it out there. Water is the new technology. Just do what engineers find a way.
They discussed this on Bill Maher, though, and they had a really great discussion like they always do on that show.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Bill Maher brought up the great point that, I mean, sure, it is probably a good thing that oil prices are going up, but it's sort of nefarious that Exxon just reported an $8 billion profit.
$5 billion, yeah.
Last quarter, which, is a little suspect, especially given... the history of our president, you know. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's got to be looked at with high suspicion.
Let's talk about him briefly, because all of a sudden he's in the mood to start, like, chastising the oil industry. But where was he a couple of years ago when the oil industry was in front of the Senate hearing committees and just getting a free ride through the whole thing? Where was he then? You know where he was? He was counting the money being put into his own pocket. You know, he was saying to himself, this is the good thing to do. And he was wrong, as he was wrong in every single action he's taken in the course of his presidency. I don't think there's been a time he's been right. Maybe he was right to visit the ruins of the Trade Center. That's true. But ever since then, he hasn't been right. So this guy is sitting there lining his own pockets, and people are actually going to say to themselves, like, I'm still following this douchebag. Understand it. I'm so baffled by this. Dude, muskox are at risk right now if we drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Are you kidding me? A muskox? I don't see those in my regular life. I want to see one day.
And I don't
want the doll sheep dead.
It really does upset me that the Republicans can so easily pull out the tax cut card and people get duped by it every time, because it's so insulting to everyone's own intellectual capability that they know they can sit back and go, fuck it, we can get this drilling thing passed if we just offer a stupid $100 to all these morons.
Yeah.
And then people buy into it, and what's that $100 going to get you? Nothing! Nothing that better policies would have gotten you a long time ago.
It will get you several bags of charcoal for your grill so that you can grill up summertime chicken. Yeah. That's what it'll get you.
Instead of, like, that money being funding initiatives to maybe research some better technology or something.
Exactly.
It's just, it's breeding selfishness.
Right now, we shouldn't be looking to... Yeah, exactly. I'm just tired of it. And so, yeah, my mom's comments, because she was very steadfast in her resolve when I was telling her that there's no way that I would ever accept drilling in the wildlife refuge, and she just didn't seem to quite understand why, but there's reasons for it. It's because drilling in it is completely, it's a contrived idea. It's really stupid, so I think we should end it with that.
When I worked for the government, which was saturated with Republicans at probably a rate of 80%, during the elections, we got in a lot of debates about the fact that celebrities endorse candidates and get involved in the political arena, and it seemed almost unanimously that Republicans hated it. And my theory was that it was because all of their celebrity endorsements sucked, like Toby Keith, you know, and...
horrible.
Chuck Norris, Bruce Willis, like just meathead morons. Bo Derek, the worst of the worst. While we had people with a considerable better reputations and more clout, like George Clooney or Michael Stipe or Eddie Vedder and that type of person. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at times it would annoy me that celebrities would endorse things because they would approach it from a position that they were potentially far more enlightened than the rest of their population. But more and more I'm beginning to see the benefits of it, that in the face of this quagmire in Iraq, we have celebrities like Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Angelina Jolie, who are sort of using the media to refocus attention on Africa as opposed to Iraq, sort of juxtaposing these two images, you know, of here we are in Iraq fucking around over there when there's genocide of black people in Darfur that our racist foreign policy ignores. And I'm starting to really see the benefit of celebrity endorsement.
And that my problem with celebrity endorsement comes in the form of some celebrities just don't have a fucking clue, and so what they endorse for certain political initiatives are kind of bullshit things. But now that you bring it up, because initially I was thinking to myself, well, Angelina Jolie is one of the culprits. She's one of the problems with it. But now that you said that, it suddenly struck a chord with me, because Africa really is like the most neglected continent in this entire world. And
there's one reason for it, too, and that's that they're black.
There.
And that they're expendable.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're black and they're impoverished. I mean, and it's upsetting to me, because there's no reason why we should be neglecting Africa the way we do. And I think that our policies somehow, because of... My whole point with this is simply, when it comes to celebrity endorsements, I am picky about who's endorsing what, because certain celebrities come off as retards. And other celebrities come off as understanding. For instance, George Clooney, I think, has a good grasp on world politics. Jessica Simpson doesn't. So,
who's a Republican, by the way?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly. So there's certain times where an endorsement works and an endorsement doesn't. But with I don't know. I think
basically you're proposing that you should be in charge of allowing who gets to speak on behalf of the political things that you care about.
Exactly, because I don't want some douchebag. Look, you know, Paul Giamatti. You want to speak about AIDS in Africa? All right, you're on my team. you know, Hillary Duff. You want to start talking? No, I don't think you're smart enough to even read off the script. So. Deal with that, you know. But I do know what you're talking about. Where I'm working in the government right now, there are people, and I think this. I'll say this. I think I know the origins of the disillusionment with celebrity endorsements of stuff, and because if you think about it, back in World War II and then Korean War and even Vietnam, Bob Hope was doing his stuff, and people were like, "Yeah, Bob Hope, way to go, give him a cheer." But then Jane Fonda came around, and Jane Fonda, I think, is the initial... She was the first person to inspire a hatred of celebrity endorsements because I see at my work, even now, I walk into work each day past a desk, and the desk happens to be that of a team leader of mine, and on that desk it says something like traitor/whore, and I don't understand I don't see the correlation between a traitor and a whore, but... I also notice, like, I think Michael Riding, you know, Vietnam era, you know, he's that kind of guy. And I try to figure out where exactly he's coming from, and I don't understand it, because my dad's a Vietnam veteran, and my dad's a very discerning individual. He understands the difference between right and wrong. You know, there's some times where, you know, he speaks from the heart, and sometimes that's, you know, it's a very biased perspective, but if I talk to him more about it, he'll come over to my side, and that's wonderful. And what that means is that, you know, he is a discerning individual, but there's other people who don't come over to my side, not to say that I'm right, but just to say that I'm a little bit more rational. And these people who who somehow demonize Jane Fonda, I think that's where it comes from. And it spawned from her, and to this day, people hold on to her as, like, the Antichrist of anti-war, and now there's these people who start coming out of the woodwork, and then they start saying, well, they're rich, what do they know about me? And certainly there's people who are a rabble, but there are celebrities who are still for a good cause, and whether they understand us or not, they're for our cause, and they're not invoking their own, you know, wealth in the situation. George Clooney isn't saying, hey, I'm not only a rich motherfucker, but I'm part of this. He's coming down to our level to say he's part of this, you know?
And isn't it commendable that anyone who you know, sort of gets rich in this country, then uses those riches to maybe try to do something noble, whether you agree with it or not, you know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of a noble cause, but, you know, now that I say that, I'm thinking maybe that they're thinking, oh, I'm paying him this money to entertain me, and now he's using it, you know, to bother right. me about something I don't think is valid or something like that. But, I mean, they're artists. Artists, their job is to sort of engage the world critically.
Yeah.
And resemble it, mirror it, distort it. I mean, that's their job as an artist. If they didn't do that, all we'd have is, like, fucking vaudeville or something, you know? Like, like Michael Stipe, he writes songs that are critical because it's fucking music, rock and roll, like, that's what it does. He can't separate that from his public life. That's him.
And him and, like, I think him and Eddie Vedder, I think, are very political when it comes to the songs they write. I've listened to the last few Pearl Jam albums, and even this latest one, it's still very critical of Bush. And there's times when he's up on stage, and it's, I think it's almost his duty as a performing artist. He reaches millions of people, unlike you and I. We reach hundreds with this podcast, if that. And it's almost our duty to make people aware of the situations. And whether they want to tap into us or not, that's fine. But like Eddie Vedder, when he's up on stage, he's making a lot of people aware of injustices that are going on. If you don't believe in the injustice, that's your choice, Eddie Vedder. Or you stop listening to Michael Stipe, or you stop watching a George Clooney movie about McCarthyism. You know, that's just your choice. But these people have, I think when you, it almost goes back to the quote in Rushmore, where the quote about Jacques Cousteau, where it's like, you know, if you obtain some sort of celebrity, it's almost your obligation to share it with other people. You know, I don't remember the exact quote, but basically that's what it says. And I think these people have an obligation to not only share what it's like to be a celebrity, but what it's like to be able to reach millions of people with what you're with the same. It's the same message I would provide if I had a forum of a few hundred thousand people. So why should I be upset at them doing that? You know, I don't understand why I should be. Unless, of course, it's Hillary Duff and she doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about.
Yeah, I guess the opposite position would just be that they need to. You know, I'm not sure I ever quite understood the argument, and I guess this is the argument, that they should keep their political views private. And I don't quite understand why people should keep their political views private, if only that is an argument that would further function to keep those in power. You know, you need to be private, don't tell anyone who you're voting for, don't discuss issues in public, you know, because that in some way will probably aid us in our goal of, you know, maintaining, you know, our influence.
Yeah.
And I think that's a dangerous tightrope people are going to walk if they choose to just constantly be private about what they believe. I think maybe it's far more honorable to put your ass on the line and start discussing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what these few of these celebrities are doing, is just like, you know, fuck it, I'm not just going to sit back. You know, maybe I'm not very qualified, but I'm a person with celebrity, so I feel Africa's important. If they're going to follow me around with cameras, I'm going to take them to Africa.
And I think on the subject of Africa, maybe to end this, but one of the things I'm most upset about with the status of Africa is the fact that news agencies don't report on it enough, and the only news I get on Africa comes from NPR, and people want to declare NPR as some liberal bastion, but, you know, NPR is the only station that is actually delivering news on Africa to me. I don't know shit about Africa when I'm watching Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, MSNBC. You don't hear about that shit, and you only hear about Africa when they do an in-depth story about, you know, some person who's living in some tribe in Somalia. You know what I'm saying? Like, NPR is the only station that's able to deliver that news to me. It's upsetting.
Yeah, they're breaking that law of silence, you know? Yep. And that's extremely honorable.
Yep, I agree. I think that ends this podcast.
Yeah.
All right, well, what's on next week's podcast? What's up? You have a whole list of shit you want to talk about.
Amazing stuff.
What do you want to talk about? Just give me one. Give me a teaser.
Anthony Bourdain.
Who?
That's why I want to talk about him.
He's I don't understand.
He's a chef with a who does television, writes novels and books and that sort of thing.
Speaking of chefs, cool. I made an amazing dinner for myself tonight. So I decided to let everyone know how good of a cook I am. It's awesome. I spent about $180 today on groceries.
Oh my
stupid
God!
Yeah.
See, we I think we spend $70 a week, and that seems like an exorbitant amount.
This should this $180 I spent should cover me for a while. Granted, $60 of it was liquor, but still, I needed 2 bottles of wine, a half gallon of Absolut. I needed it. Just saying. So, all right, I think that ends another. That was our 20th podcast. Happy 20th podcast.
I'm kind of upset that I can't really end this podcast with Milli Vanilli either, because I just don't think it would fit as well as last week.
Can you end it with Depeche Mode?
See, I wasn't afraid Milli Vanilli would sue us, but Depeche Mode is a bit.
If they sue us, they owe us they owe us all of our money back for every concert we've been to. That's bullshit. If they sue us, we've been fans for how long? I mean, collectively, we've been fans as long as they've been on the scene. So I don't know. They shouldn't sue us. I think if you put, or maybe it could just be you, like, you know, using your mouth to like beatbox. Everything counts. If you want to try that. I dare you to. That'd be an amazing ending. All right, I think we're done.
Yeah, bye. You have been listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, April 30th, 2006, and distributed on Monday, May 1st, 2006. For more information about this podcast and other projects, like our upcoming issue number 2 of Means, please visit www.the-means.com. I would also like to personally thank Depeche Mode for not suing us in advance, of course.